Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's jump right in with the Dakota Political Junkies. Every week, we gather the premier political journalists in the state. This week, we welcome Denise Ross. She's an editor with the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Denise, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
It's great to be here, Lori.
We're also joined by Seth Tupper. Seth is an enterprise reporter with the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks for being here as well.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with Bernie Sanders campaigning throughout the state tomorrow. Seth, what do you know about what this is going to look like?
Well, he's going to be in the morning. He'll be at Pine Ridge, and we're going to have a couple people covering his appearance down there. In the afternoon, I believe the start time is 2 o'clock. He'll be at Memorial Park here in Rapid City for another appearance. And so obviously a lot of his supporters are excited about that. He does have I wouldn't call it necessarily a huge number, but a very strong and committed group of supporters out here in the Black Hills that I think are very excited to see that their candidate is coming. And a lot of these people have been with Sanders since the very beginning. I remember months and months ago when Sanders did a live video feed appearances with his supporters across the country, tapping into, you know, groups who are gathering various places all over the country. There was one of those gatherings here, and so there's been a lot of months of support for him here in the Black Hills.
Do you expect a large turnout for him?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, I don't know. I know the city is preparing for that. They sent out yesterday some guidelines and parking restrictions and advice for people to show up early and where to park and everything. So, you know, 2 o'clock on a Thursday, you know, it isn't a time that a lot of people have free, but you know, also it's not every day that you see one of the leading presidential candidates. So I would expect a good sized crowd, but I wouldn't know what to predict really.
And in Sioux Falls, they're saying come 2 hours early, the Premier Center, and it might fill up. I can't imagine filling up the Premier Center with that. Do you think that's realistic?
Again, I really don't know. You know, that I'll be really interested to see because, you know, it'll be a real reflection of the level of interest.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that are curious. When you go back to, I believe, when Obama was here, when he came in 08, you know, I was at Mitchell then, and he did an appearance outside the Corn Palace, but I think that was on a Saturday, and of course it drew a huge crowd, and I attended another event back then when Bill Clinton spoke from a front porch in Wagner, and that attracted a crowd of maybe, you know, 150, 200, so these things can kind of range all over the place.
Denise, what do you expect him to say? Is he going to come with a standard stump speech, or is he going to bring something new to South Dakota?
I would expect a standard stump speech. In fact, I heard on NPR last week somebody playing tape from when he was first running for Congress decades ago.
And I heard that too.
Almost the same. And so, you know, he is. I've heard other, you know, national commentators say he's one of the most disciplined, or if not the most disciplined, candidate on the trail right now. And he has a consistent message, and he doesn't waver from it, other than maybe changing the numbers as the numbers vary or the location where he's at. But yeah, I expect him to deliver the message that's gotten him to this point in the campaign.
What is he doing at Pine Ridge? What is that appearance going to be like?
Well, yeah, go ahead, Seth. I think you know more than I do.
Well, I was just going to say that would be the one area that we're really interested to see, because you would think that the circumstances there would force him to say something a little different, obviously, and confront some of the issues that are prevalent there. So that's where we're looking for. Maybe that'll be the appearance where he does, you know, go off script maybe a little bit and give us something a little out of the ordinary, just because of obviously the unique situation there. It isn't the kind of place that has exactly the same problems as the rest of the country. It has its own unique set of problems.
Denise, you want to add to that?
I would only add that I saw somebody posted a reply to a Facebook post saying that he was coming, wanting everyone to wear their free Leonard Peltier t-shirts. And so I think we're going to see a fair amount of other political statements besides just Bernie's down there on Pine Ridge.
Sure. How have previous presidential candidates sort of approached tribal issues or courted the Native American vote, Denise?
You know, it's been a vote on the rise. People are more and more trying to court the Native vote. I happened to cover Bill Clinton when he was in Pine Ridge back, and I want to say it was towards the end of his presidency, so maybe 1999. And they started this promise zone, and they created or laid the groundwork to create the Boys and Girls Center down in named after Sue Ann Dinkroa. And anyway, you know, that's something that even in South Dakota, the politicians struggle sometimes to connect with the Native voters and exactly what the right message is. I'm going to guess that you know, with the voter turnout, when the voters on the reservations, there are 90% plus Democrats. So I'm going to guess these are fairly engaged voters with Bernie Sanders' message and the Hillary Clinton message. So I think they know what Bernie's about, and they're going to do what they can, as I said, to get their own messages out and use that platform to promote their own causes. And so, as Seth said, I think that may be the more interesting event of the two tomorrow.
Seth, is it an authentic sort of way for a candidate like Bernie Sanders to listen and make promises that he can deliver, or does it become sort of a, I don't want to say the word stunt, but does it come lip service as here I am on the reservation for a presidential candidate?
Well, as with everything on Pine Ridge, I think it's a complex answer, because I think, you know, obviously the candidates probably go down there hoping to make a difference and to improve life for people there. But as we know, there's been a lot of promises made at Pine Ridge over many decades, and there hasn't been a whole lot of improvement in the quality of life for a lot of people on the reservation. So it does become, I think, you know, for the candidates, if you're going to campaign in South Dakota, there aren't really any other places where you can go and find, as Denise said, a place where 90% of the people are Democrats. So it is an opportunity. If you can go there and you can win broad support, then obviously that's a lot of votes that you can win, and potentially in one place. That's a lot of bang for your buck, so to speak. So, I mean, I think there's obviously, you know, genuine concern about the issues there, but also, you know, some political calculus taking place.
Can Bernie Sanders win South Dakota, Seth? What are his chances here in the primary on June 7th?
Well, again, you know, that's unknown. I still have not seen any polling at all, so we really don't have any indication. The only thing I can really fall back on is in 2008, Hillary Clinton beat Barack Obama in the South Dakota primary, and pretty handily. I don't recall the exact percentage, but it wasn't a runaway, but I want to say she got around 55% of the vote. Maybe I'd have to check that to be sure. But so, you know, that was only 8 years ago. You would think there'd be, you know, a significant level of lingering support for Hillary Clinton. So I'm not sure. The delegates are awarded proportionally. So, you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, Hillary Clinton's going to come out of South Dakota with some of the delegates regardless, even if she doesn't campaign here. So, I'm not sure if he can win, and even if he does, I'm not sure that it's going to make much of a difference.
So break down proportional, the delegates are awarded proportionally, and the superdelegate conversation. Break that down for me, Seth.
Yeah, I just happened to interview Suzanne Jones Pranger, the executive director of the Democratic Party, yesterday, once we learned, obviously, that you know, our Democratic primary is going to be contested. Wanted to learn a little bit more about the delegate selection process. So the South Dakota Democratic Party has 25 delegates to the national convention. You take out the five superdelegates who can vote for whomever they please, regardless of the primary results. You take out six additional delegates who are chosen at the state convention after the primary. And those are also awarded proportionally, but they're almost guaranteed to kind of be equally awarded, because, you know, with six delegates, unless somebody really runs away with it, both candidates are probably likely to get three or delegates. So what you're remaining, the actual number of pledged delegates that are determined by the primary is only 14, and of course those are awarded proportionally. So again, unless it's a runaway, you know, one of the candidates is going to get, you know, eight, and the other is going to get six delegates, or seven and seven, or however it works out. So again, it's a very small number of delegates actually in play, and you know, it really does, I guess, show Bernie Sanders' commitment to what he said, that he's going to fight for every delegate that remains out there, because there aren't many to be had here.
Right, Denise, any last words on Bernie Sanders for now?
You know, I would just say that we've seen him winning other states that Hillary won in 2008, and you know, if you're a Democrat in South Dakota, a very red state, you're really a Democrat. And my experience has been that you're fairly liberal, and Bernie tends to be more liberal than Hillary on most issues. So I don't count him out of winning June 7th because I think, you know, like I said, to be a Democrat in South Dakota, you're very committed to being a Democrat, and that probably means you're pretty liberal.
So let's keep talking about South Dakota Democrats and go to Jay Williams, who is challenging John Thune for a House or for a seat in the Senate, and we really haven't talked much about him yet. So what do we know about this candidate so far and how he is running his campaign? Seth, do you want to start with Jay Williams?
We know very little. He hasn't been, you know, all that visible yet, and you know, that's probably partially a result of the fact that, you know, he hasn't been in the race long and he hasn't raised very much money to conduct a campaign. Well, from what we do know, all I know about him is from the press releases that he sent out, and he has staked out, I think, a lot more liberal position than past statewide Democratic candidates have. It's clear he's his sort of MO is going to be to present a very clear and stark contrast to Senator Thune. And some of his press releases, he's hit on the EB-5 issue and saying that Senator Thune should have voted to terminate the EB-5 program. You know, and that's kind of a stretch, obviously, in that that's been mostly a state issue that hasn't really been one that has touched, you know, our congressional delegation very much. But it's been just from what I've heard, there's been some press releases. There hasn't been a lot of highly visible statewide campaigning, so we really don't know a whole lot about him yet.
Denise, what does Jay Williams have to do to get a higher profile as he moves forward?
Well, I'll tell you, I've gotten the press releases, too. I've heard him a little bit, I think, on your radio station. And it strikes me as a reporter, as a campaign that doesn't right now have much focus. It's, it looks to me like a reactive campaign in it. And sometimes it looks like throwing spaghetti against the wall with just kind of being all over the map on whatever issues you want to raise. And so I think as a first-time candidate, and I don't know Mr. Williams at all, but he could probably benefit from some professional staff, which that takes money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's definitely got an uphill battle against Senator Thune in this state. You know, Thune's been extremely popular for a very long time. So I think he's gonna have a rough campaign. But I also think that, you know, he looks like he's dedicated. He's got – what I do like about him is that he's got this kind of upbeat attitude about everything. And so I think you need that. To get through a campaign is going to be, you know, and I will say this, you know, Thune has gone unchallenged in the past, and I think that's a mistake for many different reasons, and I think it's a benefit that South Dakotans have a choice when they go to vote in November.
Sure. Does Jay Williams get a bump from the appearance of Bernie Sanders in the state, Seth?
Well, only I don't know if Jay plans to, you know, be at any of these Sanders appearances. I mean, you know, if he's going to campaign at these appearances and try to make a play for Sanders supporters, then yes. But if he's, you know, absent, then there's probably not going to be any connection or influence whatsoever.
Well, anything else on Jay Williams? We'll maybe reach out to him and see if we did invite him to come on Midday. We have not had a response from his campaign yet. So just so we have that out there, he's a standing invitation. Have either of you talked to him and talked to him personally?
No, I have not.
Yeah. I have not.
Let's talk a little bit about John Thune and Facebook. Denise, you mentioned Facebook earlier. John Thune's taken on Mark Zuckerberg. Who wants to start with that? Denise, do you want to fill us in on Thune and Facebook?
Many of your listeners probably have heard the news in the last couple of days that there was a former employee or contractor with Facebook who claims that the trending news topics were tinkered with to suppress or eliminate stories that were conservative or reported on conservative topics in a positive way. And so Senator Thune, being the chairman of the Commerce Committee, has issued a letter to Mark Zuckerberg, which is a showdown I never thought I'd see, but it's going to be very interesting. And my sense is there's not a lot that Congress can do because I think Facebook and the trending news is fully ensconced in the First Amendment, other than draw more publicity to this issue, which, as Seth will tell you, any journalist will tell you, about all you have in this world of journalism is your credibility.
Right.
And I think Facebook's credibility just took a serious blow. And so the more attention and spotlight you shine on that, the more they have to answer for. And, you know, in the world of politics, if you're explaining you're losing and Mr. Zuckerberg and the people at Facebook do have some explaining to do.
Is Facebook a credible news source? When you say they took a blow to their credibility, I mean, did they have a lot of credibility as a provider of content, of news content?
I have read that their trending news section is one of the most influential in terms of driving traffic to news stories on the internet.
Huh.
So, yeah, I do think that people rely on that because their impression was that it was an algorithm that was driving those trending topics, and now we find out there were people involved and they were curating this a little more heavily than we maybe thought.
We found out there were people involved.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Seth, what do you think about Facebook as a news source where you should seek out trending news topics?
Well, to me, it's more of a, this whole thing is kind of more of a reflection on how we've come to view Facebook and as almost a public utility, which is kind of funny. I mean, you know, the fact that people are deeply offended that Facebook, you know, allegedly would influence the trending topics list. You know, it's almost like we've come to treat Facebook as they're an electrical company or, you know, providing our natural gas or something. We have this right to you know, demand that they run their company in the way we desire. And, you know, politicians, you know, obviously see that, the importance that Facebook, the role that Facebook has in our lives. And so there's political points to be gained from you know, taking a position that's popular with some Facebook users and sort of taking advantage of their righteous indignation. And we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, it's just funny to me that, you know, the ownership that people feel over Facebook. As far as I know, they're free to run their company as they please, and it's not yet a publicly regulated utility. So
what does John Thune gain, or, you know, how can he benefit from his stance? Because he's asking in this letter for specific answers to very specific questions. Tell me how this works, and when did you start, you know, following up on things and asking for some, you know, transparency from Facebook. What's the benefit for him, Seth?
Well, I think there's some legit concern there, probably just about, you know, if they're presenting this to be you know, something and it's something else, then, you know, I think that's been Senator Thune's comment, is that, well, they should be honest and they should be transparent. So, but beyond that, I mean, it raises his profile. I mean, he was in the national news today, you know, all over the place talking about this issue. And it also, you know, given that it's allegedly, that Facebook is allegedly, you know, taking down or you know, conservative stories, it paints Thune as standing up for conservatives and, you know, bolsters his credentials there. So there are some things to be gained from that politically, you know, obviously on a kind of elevating his national profile and elevating that profile as somebody who's standing up for conservatives.
And he stood up to somebody at the airport, sort of. Seth, do you want to tell us about his TMZ video?
Yeah, a lot of people have probably seen it. It's been making the rounds. But, you know, TMZ, for those who don't know, is kind of a TV tabloid, so to speak. And they sent one of their people with probably a phone camera, it looked like, to kind of ambush Senator Thune as he was coming out of an airport, you know, wheeling his suitcase behind him. And what was funniest about it to me was TMZ, of course, is known for all of its, you know, scandalous videos and sensationalism. And, you know, Senator Thune's image is so squeaky clean that even, you know, when TMZ ambushed him in an airport, it was probably the most boring video they ever got. The person approached him and asked him about, you know, rumors that he would be chosen as Trump's running mate. And Thune just kind of chuckled and laughed and said that, you know, this person that was ambushing him must know more than he does. And it was actually really boring, but at the same time, it was kind of funny to see somebody who, you know, who's you would never expect to see in a tabloid kind of sensationalist setting like Senator Thune receiving that treatment. I'm sure he was surprised by it, too.
Denise, did you watch the video and have any comments on it?
I did, and I guess my comment would be I think John Thune would sooner switch his party affiliation to a Democrat than he would become Donald Trump's running mate. But I don't think he would ever say that.
I don't think so either. He said, I like my job, or I like the job I have, or something like that. He did sort of respond to the question that was being asked. Denise, looking forward at the president and also looking at in Senate races and also looking back a little bit, you got a phone call from Larry Pressler. You want to tell us about that before we go?
Completely out of the blue. I was working on getting some insurance documents signed, and my phone rang from a 202 number. I had no, you know, which I used to get calls from 202 quite a lot. I had no, don't so much anymore. So I answered it with some curiosity, and it was Larry Pressler, and he wanted my mailing address because he wanted to send me a copy of his book. So I immediately went on Amazon, and there's a book that was published in February about his run for Senate in 2014 as an independent. And he did get quite a bit of traction for a while, as we can recall, because now the Senator Mike Rounds, that former governor, was taking quite a beating over the EB-5 scandal, and Democrat Rick Wyland, being a Democrat, has, you know, that comes with its own inherent problems in South Dakota as a candidate, and he was getting traction too, but Larry definitely had his moment in the sun during that campaign. But his, you know, and it's interesting in this presidential cycle, being the year of the outsider, you know, Larry was trying to run as the outsider in that race, so he may have just been a little bit ahead of his time.
Denise Rawson is an editor with Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Denise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Seth Tupper, an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks for being here as well.
You're welcome.